Hello, and welcome to the 32nd or 33rd episode of the show Feast and Famine.
Something like that.
We had another bad month there between me going back to full-time work and you actually having, like, work.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and, you know, me working Wednesday through Sunday.
Yeah, and me having a schedule that gets made up pretty much the day before I am told it, so...
Is it, like, one of the things where, like, they close their eyes, throw darts at a board, and just, like, these days?
No, it's one of those things where me and the people I work directly with have our schedules, like here are the hours we can work, and here's when we need to be here, and my boss can't act because we use, like, I can't remember the name of the software, but it's basically a hour assignment thing. She can't officially publish a schedule until she's got it set for everyone. So... the, like, three people who consistently don't... Sorry, I'm trying to move the mic a little bit. Who consistently have, like, special requirements or needs or stuff, like, screwed up for everyone else.
Yeah.
Like, right now it's two other people who also attend the same university who have not submitted their school schedule yet.
That...
their school schedule that they've known since May. So when I came in yesterday, my chef was just like, thank you for submitting your schedule. I'm like, I can't tell if you're being sarcastic or not. She's like, I'm not being sarcastic. The other two haven't even responded.
People.
Yeah.
People.
Yep. So, in case you've been living under a rock...
like me.
PAX was this weekend. I'm very annoyed with that because I was in Seattle. Until Thursday, when we left... I was visiting my in-laws.
Is that what they are, technically?
Technically, yeah. That's what we've been calling them.
Okay.
And the best part is that PAX officially starts every year on a Friday, usually the Friday before Labor Day.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized this on our drive to the airport. Because the entire, like, Seattle airport was swarmed with people trying to leave because they were from downtown Seattle and knew what was going on, or people trying to pick up other people who had just flown in.
Great.
Yeah.
So that doesn't sound crazy at all.
No. But one of the big things that they do at every single PAX Prime, it should be said, not the other ones, is they have, Wizards of the Coast has, first of all, some kind of puzzle to solve that usually involves running all around the convention center and solving different riddles and other things like that. And doing so will get you an invite to the Magic Party, which they usually use as basically a big meet and greet with lots of usually halfway decent drinks and big blown up poster boards of some of the cards from the new set. And some of those are in the album that we're looking at, and then we have better versions that aren't taken with a spotlight underneath them. Oh, no, I tried taking those pictures. There is literally a spotlight underneath the poster.
Uh-huh.
To make, like, it looks fine when you're looking at it, but on camera it gets really screwed up.
Right. Because cameras are not human brains and eyes.
Yeah. So they do that the, I believe, Saturday night. And then on Sunday, they have, first of all, a, like, general panel where they talk about the next set and all that stuff. And then they have a world-building panel where they usually don't spoil cards like they do in the first one, but they'll explain a lot more of the story and stuff like that and where they came from when they were making it. So a lot of the stuff that we've got here is from both panels, and we're totally cheating and using the Gathering Magic album of everything. Mm-hmm. So we're basically going to go through it. We'll skip over the weird, what are they called? Blown out pictures, because there's usually a better version of it here somewhere. I think there's one that we're looking at right now who doesn't actually have a English printing yet, but we'll look at pretty much everything else. So, the first thing that we were going to look at is the...
Bear Punch.
What? Well, yes. I mean, there are the... when they first announced that they were doing Cons of Tarkir, they showed us all these pictures that are the different... that are sort of like representations where there's like the guy punching a bear just cuz and a bear making the best face ever. The weird tiger with magic fire surrounding him that I'm really hope this is a legendary creature, not a like spell.
Yeah.
Because that would just be a waste of really nice art.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it always feels that way.
And then there's a monk flipping over what looks to be an eyeless orc, or it might just be an orc whose eyes are, like, slightly tilted away from...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But the big things are these pictures that they showed that we've now seen some of the cards that they're related to that are sort of a look at the group, here's what they're sort of about.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one we've got is the Azaban Houses, which is the white-black-green wedge. They value the dragon's endurance, meaning that their symbol is going to be the dragon scale. I think one of the best descriptions I've seen of this art is that it's sort of like, despite the fact that there's no red, it almost looks like it's Boros.
Uh-huh.
Because you have a lot of the, like, red showing through, but you do get
mm-hmm.
a lot of the black and the white, less of the green.
Yep.
But it's also one of the more inclusive pictures, oddly.
Because,
mm-hmm. I mean, you've got an Aven in that back left corner, a couple of humans from, like, that are actually fairly racially divergent.
Yay.
And who have armor that sort of reflects that fairly impressively.
Mm-hmm.
We've got this...
But yet there's still a unity amongst the group.
Yeah, there's a unity in this
very
sort
triangular.
Of... I was about to say, like, these very sharp angles.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even if they don't have the same pattern, they have these very sharp angles, and even if it's not triangles, some of them look to be a little bit more square, but mm-hmm. yeah. Then there's also this... there's a dog person who mm-hmm. I don't think we have a species name for that yet. And the new look for orcs is also in there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like this, and I think we've seen the card that this is attached to, but it'll be lower down the list.
Uh-huh.
I think it's a pretty impressive thing, and I like that they're supposed to be endurance, so all of them are wearing, like, almost full battle plate, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Except for the dog guy.
Yeah.
I can't mm-hmm. really tell what he's wearing. It's very mm-hmm. small.
And the bird person, second in from the left, is also... You can sort yeah, of tell there's a bit less there than there are on the more humanoid-y yeah. ones.
And the best part is that I haven't seen very many of the... God, I wish we had a name for the dog people. But the Aven, it looks like they're in at least three different groups.
Mm-hmm.
So they're making a big comeback with them, which I really like. We haven't seen Aven in a long time.
But I feel like for, you know, like, dragon-inspired set, it's, you know, really nice.
Oh,
cool
yeah.
thing,
like,
definitely.
Bird people is definitely a good thing if you're going mm-hmm. to a plane that involves dragons
yes.
highly. So the next one we've got is the Jeskai. I'm totally guessing that's how it's pronounced.
Uh-huh, I can't imagine it being pronounced any other way.
It could be K, but I'm not sure.
Jeskai. Huh.
The Jeskai way, they value a dragon's cunning, so their watermark is an eye. It's charitable to say that's an eye. Like, I don't know if we have a good picture of the watermark, but let me see mm-hmm. if I can find one. Cause it's this thing. Mm-hmm. It's sort of... It almost looks like it's supposed to be made out of magic, because it's this
mm-hmm.
sort of, like, arcing
mm-hmm.
fireball and almost like a upside-down blue mm-hmm. mana symbol with another thing underneath. Like, I can tell how it's supposed to be an eye, but it's just odd.
Uh-huh.
Da-da-da-da. Back to...
The other things are a bit more literal. That
yeah.
one's a bit more... What is it,
so,
abstract impressionist?
This is the one that I was kind of confused about because, I mean, we've got two humans who are very clearly monks, and
mm-hmm.
from what we've seen of the creatures that are going to be in this, a lot of them are monks.
Mm-hmm.
And you can even see a very traditional monastery in the background.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a guy who appears to be an orc, but with much less, like, hair, I guess.
It's very, what is it, like samurai orc.
Yeah. Then we've got an Aven with a very different body structure than the one who is in the... I already forgot their name.
Azaban?
The Azaban houses. And then we've got the guy on the right, and I cannot tell you what on earth he is, or she.
Mm-hmm.
Because
it's like a... It reminds me of the... What's his face? The voodoo guy from Princess and the Frog.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Can't remember the name.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he's got these very long, spindly... Mm-hmm. limbs extending away from him, and his fingers almost seem to fade into the magic that he's using.
And he feels like he's more in shadow than the other four characters.
Yeah. There's also
a
lack of features around his face as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't tell if that's actually a face or if there's a hat there.
Yeah. He's very vague and ambiguous.
Yeah,
despite being a very defined, obvious character in this, you know, kind of Avengery group.
Yeah, he definitely draws attention, and I do like the... I like that they're monks, but only one of them actually... Well, two of them are using weapons.
Mm-hmm.
and only one of them is using a weapon that I am in even, like, the most normal way, most remotely, like, know about.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'd say that the monk who's sort of crouching, I think that is a weapon that they made up, because mm-hmm. A chain staff is a weapon that it's... I'm not comfortable with using one, but I know how they are used. Mm-hmm. What he is basically holding is a stick with two separate chains ending in sort of a stiletto-style point, mm-hmm. and then there's a little blade at the back end.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is that that would not be a useful weapon, because...
It makes for a nice art piece.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I could see, like, that wouldn't be effective in reality. Because
the problem is, if you've ever seen a stiletto, and it's kind of the same for a traditional Japanese weapon called a sai...
I've seen a stiletto pocket knife, I've been told about them.
There is not a blade. It is usually a... If it's a... what is actually known as a stiletto, not uh-huh. what has become synonymous with it. It is a perfectly rounded, or in some cases, hexagonal sort of rod... that tapers into a point.
Okay.
So, in this case, you would have to measure exactly such that you only hit the person with the point,
mm-hmm.
and that just doesn't work.
Right.
Because you have no blade. You would the point of the weapon, the like bladed end of his weapon, is to like stab people, which mm-hmm. you can't do when it's on the end of a chain.
Yeah.
It's just a bit odd.
Uh-huh. And also, having the two seems like, you know, there'd be the one to hit the one person, another that would, you know, ricochet and come back around and hit you.
It's why I would not ever want to use either nunchucks or a chain staff, because you have so little control, ultimately. Mm-hmm. And then we've got an Aven who just appears to have the staff in the background.
Mm-hmm.
I do like that we've got a monk who does not have any weapons and is not using magic. So we're mm-hmm. just sort of left guessing what I think it's a she, because they're both bald and it's hard to tell.
Mm-hmm. She seems to be a bit more busted.
Yeah. She seems minorly more horrifying, honestly, than the guy with the silly weapon. And then there's the orc, who's just like, I'm not messing with that, because his fist is the size of that guy's head.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then I like how they're... There's less of a motif amongst them, and like they're all very, you know, dressed as their own, but I feel like there is still a motif of like more swirly organic-y.
Yeah, and I think shapes. That works really well with the fact that this is the blue, white, red group,
mm-hmm.
because you get the idea that there's... Okay, so the way that wedges work is that it's based on a one color and then its two enemies.
Uh-huh.
So in this case, I believe...
It's red, right?
Yes, so usually the idea is that it is focused on the primary color, and then the primary color, the secondary colors add to the elements.
Mm-hmm.
So with red, you have passion and individuality and those kind of things, which is why, even though, first of all, there's almost no species overlap in this picture.
Right.
The two who you have that are from the same species still clearly...
Yeah.
Are very individual, very different.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got, in this case, white and blue, which are both colors of sort of order, the exact opposite of red. So it's the idea that everyone has a sense of individuality, but they're all seeking
uh-huh.
sort of a unification, or as we see later...
it's like they have like a similar goal and use their, you know, own...
And in this case...
to achieve it.
What we see later from other cards is that their goal is primarily enlightenment,
mm-hmm.
Which we'll see a really amazing quote on one of the lands that I really like so far.
Mm-hmm.
So up next, we've got what I think is my favorite clan so far, the Sultai Brood.
Mm-hmm.
This is the black, green, and blue. They value a dragon's ruthlessness, and their watermark is a dragon's fang.
Mm-hmm.
This is interesting, at the very least. Because at the forefront, we've got a snake person, who officially now have a creature type as Naga.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a lot of humans. This back over here might be a reptile guy in the back left, but I can't really tell, so it might be another Naga. And then there's this giant guy back here, who I think is a Minotaur, but I'm honestly not sure.
Mm-hmm.
And there aren't any depicted in this picture, but we do know that there are also... I think we have seen that there are Aven also part of this clan.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not 100% sure. So, I don't know about you, but I get sort of a Golgari with more metal sort of feel from them.
Because
it's not the pure reliance on plants and zombies, but it's still clearly there. It's very natural, but slightly off.
Uh-huh. It's, like, organic in, you know, both, like, the growy sense and, like, the of-the-earth harvested or miney kind of thing.
Yeah. And in the fact that almost I think that's what I was trying to go for, is that the organic that... Even those of them who are wearing armor,
mm-hmm.
it looks like it's primarily leather or stuff made out of animals, and very little of it, except for the actual weapons, is made out of like metal or anything that they mined.
Mm-hmm. That said, that cursor is currently over the Minotaur piece that has, you know, like this intense headpiece of metalness.
Yeah, it's like that and some of the more decorative pieces, which mm-hmm. I think is where, in this case, because the primary color here is green mm-hmm. with blue and black then adding to it.
Yep.
It's sort of, they embody nature, but then both blue and black sort of drive towards progress.
Mm-hmm.
And they also drive towards more, I don't want to say, like they are the unnatural parts of this color combination.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, that's where you get the metal, that's
green
where you
is
get...
the more conservative, everything stay the same, and just...
It's not even more conservative, it's more of just, like, there is a natural cycle, uh-huh. and both blue and black seek to subvert that cycle,
mm-hmm.
be it through raising undead or anything like that. And we've seen that, we'll see later, that these guys are definitely, in some aspect, necromancers.
Yeah, I do really appreciate how you definitely get the blue-black-green feel from this car. Like, even though there's all these other colors, like a lot of gold and red and purple... and stuff, like, it feels very, you know, swampy teal.
Yeah, for some reason, I think especially the mist tends to help with the blue-black.
Definitely.
And I think the green you mostly get because of the heavy emphasis on the Naga right in front.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, snakes have been very heavily equated with green, and at times like they've also... Green. We've seen a couple of snakes that were green-blue.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just one of those things that after a while starts to kind of click.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just...
And the aqueducts.
Yeah, the aqueducts and the sort of, like, streaming water.
Mm-hmm. It's cool because it's both sort of mountainous, like, you know, those, like, remote areas of Asia you see, you know, pictures of and stuff. Like,
yeah.
Fiji and, you know, Japan and whatnot. But then because of, like, the aqueducts also has that sort of, like, Roman feel.
I was almost feeling, and this feels out of place because... I was almost feeling like it's sort of an Incan thing.
Or, like I'm getting that. What am I trying to articulate here? Both like in like the Asian mountainy isolated feel / South American isolated feel, I guess.
Yeah.
And there's also a little bit of like Atlantis sort of to the architecture.
Yeah, I can definitely see that where it's architecture that seems to have been. Adapted around the constant presence of water
mm-hmm.
and the constant just sort of flow of life around it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the water's cool because it relates to, like, the, you know, we were saying, like, organic-y thing and stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, water makes plants grow and stuff, but it's also how, like, we, like, mine out a lot of ores and stuff.
It's also what we use to remove waste in a lot of cases, so it's... Mm-hmm. It... in ways, again, sort of reflects this endless cycle that, especially with green as your base color, you're sort of supposed to reflect, since,
mm-hmm.
like, black has uses for, what's it called? For, like, life and death.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the thing that we always think of when someone mentions death in magic.
Mm-hmm.
But green has a basis in that as well, but usually it's in a natural sort of thing. It's
mm-hmm.
eventually things are going to die.
Mm-hmm.
So... green is built around, like, things are going to die, but new things will take their place.
And then just, like, last thing is, like, I didn't really see, like, a shapey kind of motif, but there are still definitely, like,
yeah.
similar things done with all their, like, costumey outfits. And the main thing I get is shoulder armor.
Yeah, they do have a little bit of shoulder, like, consistency. There's also a lot of, not even sharp angles, but a lot of use of, especially with this odd priestess over here, mm-hmm. And especially being next to the Minotaur-like dude, there's just a lot of very sharp, like, points, mm-hmm. but almost as if they're trying to imitate something organic and natural.
Mm-hmm. It's a smooth point.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, jagged.
And except for the sword that the, like, front Naga is holding,
mm-hmm.
most of their weapons I kind of really like.
Because
mm-hmm. they are all holding, oh, I can't remember the name of it. So the weapon that they're holding is about half of what a bunch of people now know is a Shaolin Spade from the Zombie Survival Guide.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically a form of a glaive, and I cannot... Because it doesn't have the back half, from mm-hmm. what we can see here, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember the name of what it actually is called. But I really like it. There's no real tie between it and the colors that we're seeing here, but it's a really nice choice because it is actually a Far Eastern
mm-hmm.
Medieval weapon. The sword I'm not quite so sure about. It
feels more like a meat cleaver to me than a sword.
I think that's sort of supposed to be the point. I'm also getting... I'm also sort of getting a... sort of a water feel from it, just because of the uh-huh. odd way that it splits off, uh-huh. almost like a fishtail or
a
geyser.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But there's a guy directly to the left of the snake who is holding a much more natural sword, which basically looks like a machete,
mm-hmm.
which seems appropriate for this group.
Yeah.
So before we ramble on too long, let's move on to the Mardu Horde. These are some guys... This is actually some art we've already seen before. The one that we went on at length about with the shaman and such.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Black, Red, White clan. They value the dragon's speed, which is why their watermark is the dragon's wings, which is what we saw on the banners earlier.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to hear us go way more at length about this, listen to two episodes ago, I think, because last episode was Dimir.
Yeah, and then, so much conjecture and stuff. I feel like we hit a couple things.
Yeah. Although we have learned from the card that this art is going to be attached to, that the little guy who is on the rocks right here is actually a goblin,
mm-hmm.
and that they are a part of this clan, although they seem to be a much more sort of a servant class, a menial class.
Mm-hmm.
So then, last but not least, we've got the Temur Frontier.
Mm.
This is the green, red, blue, which means that their focus is... blue, I believe? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yes. They value a dragon's savagery. Their watermark is a dragon's claw.
Mm-hmm.
So, I like that... For some reason, when I was reading this, I never quite associated that blue was their base color.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very confused, why are these mountain people?
Uh-huh.
But now that I'm realizing, oh, blue is their base. Duh. So they're going to be a lot of... I'm willing to bet that magic is going to be very heavily influenced throughout this clan's culture,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time, they're rather savage, because, mm-hmm. I mean, you've got green and red, which are nature mm-hmm. and chaos and passion, so...
Right. Uh-huh.
This is a hard bit of art to analyze, though, since everyone is covered in these, like, cloaks.
What I think of is, you know, like, what people would be like during the Ice Age.
Yeah. And you get the feeling that this is probably a clan that's much farther removed than some of the other ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, you could see the other ones probably interacting on a more regular basis.
Yeah, this is the clan that has sort of...
You have to go out of your way to, you know...
Yeah, they pulled back into the mountains where they're much less likely to encounter the rest of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
So they're... driving towards whatever their personal goal is more.
I would imagine that would give them a little bit more wisdom, and, like, they probably, like, had dragons, like, a little bit longer and stuff, because, you know, just being away from other people.
Yeah.
Like, there being fewer of them, or, you know, not so much with the bulk of the rest of society on this plane and stuff, they wouldn't have been able to take them all out so fast where they were.
And it looks like the primary members of this are going to be human. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, it appears to be human who's riding the ox and a human who's riding the saber-toothed wolf.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't tell if that is either a Minotaur to his right, on the like right side.
Just a guy wearing everything yeah. ever.
And like, from the face on the guy on the far right, I'd almost say that might be sort of a bulkier version of the dog people who we've seen.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And then there's one over here on the left who has this sort of facial drapery. And we've seen, I think, two cards that actually feature that. Both of them were human, if I can remember, but... I'm also a bit confused about these things going up into the sky.
My instant thought is, of course, mammoth tusks.
If it weren't for the set that we were already at, yeah. I'd agree with you. I'm starting to think it might be, like, dragon bones, maybe, but it's just odd. Because there's no correlation to any form of structure to them.
Mm-hmm. Like, the thing I think would be ribs, but I don't... like carved ribs, because yeah. ribs wouldn't naturally come up to quite such a tapered point like that.
They also wouldn't have the one odd one that's really out of place that sort of sloped, but it could have fallen yeah. down or something. Yeah. yeah. But we will definitely have to see with that. This art is just so much harder to like really...
There's a lot of white and blendiness yeah. happening.
It's and the other thing
makes sense because of the snow blindness and everything.
And it's hard to explain, but there's also something more vague, I guess, about how it's actually painted. Because there aren't quite as many... I mean, when you go back and look at...
There's a lot of hard contour lines defining...
Yeah, like, especially when you look between, like, the Mardu Horde, where every single one of these is rendered in, like, beautiful detail. There's a lot of... Not even vaguity, but just...
It's, like, blended together. Yeah. Like, the way the light is reflecting it.
Yeah.
It's, you know, kind of miragey slightly, that there's probably a bit of, like, snowy mist floating
in. And the fact that the sun is behind them is... It's very much taking into account... It's as if the artist was trying to attempt that this isn't a camera taking this picture. This is a person seeing this. Like,
yeah,
the sun is behind this. I can't see these people's faces.
It's really brilliantly done.
Yeah.
It, you know, both articulates the landscape and also because of that landscape that these people we don't know so much about because they're very isolated.
Yeah, it makes them much more mysterious. So...
I'm very impressed with that artwork.
The next card... We're actually going to start getting into some real cards here. And we're going to skip this one because I know that it's back here later, but... I think this
Stephanie
one
did
is not.
Stay awake until 5 in the morning. Good heavens.
So, first of all, we've got Thousand Winds. So, this is a rare. It's going to be in the Speed versus Cunning set. It is a 4 colorless, 2 blue, creature elemental. It's a 5/6 with flying and the returning mechanic, Morph. So, for those of you who are unfamiliar with Morph, you can play this creature face down for 3 mana. It is a 2/2 with no creature types. Then you can pay its other casting, its morph cost, which in this case is 5 colorless and 2 blue, and flip it face up to its current thing. I believe, because it is still technically the same card, it doesn't have Summoning Sickness, but do not quote me on that. I'm not 100% sure. The one thing I am sure about, though, is that using Morph is an action that is faster than everything else. It does not use the stack. For anyone even remotely familiar with weird rules cases, it is basically as fast as removing one's genes in a game of unglued/unhinged. So when Thousand Winds is turned face up, return all other tapped creatures to their owner's hands. So it's a nice sort of really quick board clear that's not too bad, honestly.
And you can see more of the Jeskai temples and stuff. And
yeah.
The eye watermark that we mentioned earlier is a very sort of ambiguous eye.
Now that I'm thinking about it, actually, I'm 99% sure that the creature is not summoning sick, because one of the ways that this is used is, oh, swing with this morph creature, also flip it up, all of your things bounce back to your hand now, or something silly like that. So this one is a bit annoying because it's not in English. Yeah, I know. There's a because we're doing this on Gathering Magic's album, we can see what it is. So it is the, and this is a translation, so can't always guarantee. This is going to be the Biobox promo, the Soundclaw Mystic. It is for 1 colorless and 1 green. Wait, why am I reading? This is your turn. Sorry.
I'm sorry. I was up until 5 a.m. watching Parks and Rec this morning, so I'm kind of not awake right now. I didn't even realize. I thought about it earlier. I was like, yeah, just let Steven keep talking.
No, okay. Sorry.
So it's SoundCloud Mystic. It's one colorless, one green. It's a rare 2/1 creature human shaman, which you can actually kind of translate for yourself.
Yeah, because it's...
Yay, Spanish. They were similar enough.
Creatura? Wait, I don't speak Spanish.
Creatura shaman humano. Human shaman.
Yeah.
It translates.
Yeah.
Okay, and it has tap, add, what is that?
Green, blue, or red.
Why does it say G, U, or... Okay.
Because,
oh, I see.
Yeah,
I,
because
okay.
Black is B.
why not BL? Okay, anyways. Add green, blue, or red to your mana pool. It has morph 2, which is not completely translated, so...
Basically, you can pay 3 to play it as a 2/2. Then mm-hmm. you can pay 2 to flip it up.
Mm-hmm. And when this card is turned faced up, add green, blue, and red to your mana pool.
So that's actually pretty nice.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of a ritual. I mean, it gains you 1 extra mana.
Can't read that.
Yeah. Okay. So I think all of these are actually shown later.
Right.
Remind me about this one, because he might not be, and we might have to come back to him, because he's stupid.
Writing it down.
Yeah.
I'm taking notes this time.
She is. I'm kind of scared.
It just seemed like a good idea.
Okay, so I think we should only cover one of these and then just read the flavor text, because it's a cycle.
Yep.
Hey, guess what? We all kind of expected this would... Well, we expected this would happen eventually.
Mm-hmm.
There are new fetch... Well, I don't actually know if these are the same named fetch lands. I'm willing to bet that they're probably the same name, because it would be a horrible waste if it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
But we have new fetch lands. They are the allied color... Yeah, the allied color cycle. Yep. And if you don't know what they are, it's basically tap it, pay 1 life, sacrifice the land, and go search your library for one of 2 different kinds of basic lands. They come into play. They are not tapped.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got red, black, blue, white, blue, black,
green, white,
and
red,
green. Yeah. So they all, because they're awesome, have really sweet new flavor text, though.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll do the first one, and then we'll just swap off.
Cool.
Where dragons once triumph, their bones now molder.
Mm-hmm. And then for Flooded Strand, we have where dragons once slept, their bones now rest.
Dragons once prevailed, their bones now sink, which is the polluted delta.
Mm-hmm. Windswept Heath, where dragons once roared, their bones now keen.
And for the wooded foothills, where dragons once... Oh. Where dragons... breath once burned, their bones now freeze.
Hmm.
So do you want to take this?
Uh-huh. Okay.
I don't know if this one is going to be part of a cycle, but it's nice that we're getting some gold cards again.
Yeah, so we have gold rare, Crackling Doom, red, white, black. So it is, what's it called? The Mardu Horde.
Yes.
With the wings. It's instant. Crackling Doom deals 2 damage to each opponent. Each opponent sacrifices a creature with the greatest power amongst creatures he or she controls.
Ugh.
Do not fear the lightning. Fear the one it obeys.
I want this in at least one of my commander decks.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah, because in multiplayer, that's actually pretty sweet.
Uh-huh.
And for only 3 mana, that's not bad.
Yeah.
So up next is the Dragon Style Twins for 3 colorless.
I feel like
and
that sounds racist, but...
Maybe. For 3 colorless and 2 red, it is a creature human monk. It is a rare. It's a 3/3, and it is part of the Jeskai Way. With double strike and one of the new abilities for this set, Prowess. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, this creature gets +1/+1 until the end of turn. We are the flicker of the flame, and it's... Wait, sorry. I cannot read this. It's tiny. We are the flicker of the flame, and it's heat, the 2 sides of a single blade. Which, I don't think their blades really reflect that well, but besides that... I do like that they're, in a less easy symbolization for that, at least the guy in the front, his blades are actually chained together.
Yay. But yeah, it's good. What is it? You know, the black and white and red, it's really pretty.
No, this one's...
But, I mean, just being the use of color in the card art.
It's a very nice contrast with the odd, like, red scarf things mm-hmm. that seem to be attached to their arms or shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very off... I imagine that it would be very off-putting when you see someone charging at you with dancing daggers,
mm-hmm.
bright red gashes.
Dancing daggers, that'd be a good magic card if they haven't already done that one.
I bet they have.
Yeah. All right, Dune Blast. 4 colorless, 1 white, 1 white, 1 black, 1 green. Rare sorcery. Choose up to 1 creature. Destroy the rest.
Buh.
The Abzan turn to this spell only as a last resort, for its inevitable result is that they most dread to be alone. And it's just it reminds me of Indiana Jones and just like everyone turning to dust.
Yeah.
And stuff and like burning off. You just see these skeletons like evaporating almost.
It's, oh god, they did something that had similar art to this in Innistrad, but it was one of the blocks of Innistrad. I don't think it was in the Killing Wave. There's a bunch of angels basically being burned down to their bones.
I feel like I remember this.
Yeah, and we gave it some crap because there was a... Either we did, and I know the Mana Pool did, because there's a... In that one piece of art, and it's never shown again, there's a, like, bone that is sort of jutting from the breast that birds have like, tie-down for the muscles that they use to move their wings.
Mm-hmm.
But none of the angels on Innistrad actually have, like, the bulge in their chest where that would be. It's just like, you didn't talk with anyone when you were making this, did you?
You just actually did your research.
Yeah, you did. However, you didn't look at the other cards, sadly.
Yeah. Maybe just that was a much more bird-like angel.
Yeah. I do really like the flavor text here. Because that does seem to be, like, despite the fact that one of their other colors is, actually no, I think black is their primary color for the Abazan. Because green and white are both enemies of black, so yeah.
Yeah.
So it's odd that it takes a lot of power from the other two colors, and that they very much are based on that whole, like, the other two colors are very much groups and natural order and, like, pack hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And black is usually solidarity and individuality.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that the even though that they're black-based, they're drawing a lot from those other two colors.
It's cool because it shows, you know, what they value is to endure, but it shows the downside of that as well. The cost to enduring.
Yeah.
It's cool.
So the next one is also a member of the Abazan houses. This is Herald of Anaphaza.
Fenza?
Anaphaza. I believe is probably going to be the legendary creature for that house, but we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
For that group. So it is a creature human soldier, costs 1 white, it is also a rare. For some reason, like, most of these are rares.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 2-1. A 2-1 for 1 white is not bad, but it has the ability, which I think is the ability mechanic for, like, this clan, Outlast. For 2 colorless and 1 white, put a +1/+1 counter on this creature. Outlast can only be cast as a sorcery, used as a sorcery.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you activate Herald of... Sorry, what did you go with?
Anaphaza. There's an N in there that you forgot.
Oh, okay. Whenever you activate Herald of Anaphaza's Outlast ability, put a 1/1 white warrior creature token onto the battlefield.
Nice.
So for 1, you get a 2-1. For 3... You make your 2-1 bigger permanently, and you get another 1/1.
Mm-hmm.
This seems very good.
Yeah.
Huh. And I really like the fact that it is literal. The art is literally a herald,
mm-hmm.
and that he appears to be blowing a horn made out of the tusk of possibly one of the elephants that is coming out mm-hmm. the gate back there.
It reminds me of, like, a very, like, insectoid or reptilian, like, lizard tail or something.
I'd almost say
flicky bit or something.
Like antelope horn.
That
way it does that sort of odd ridging. But I don't know of any that really have that terrifying curve to them normally.
Yeah, that is a particularly odd curve there.
So this one's all yours.
Okay, Jeskai Elder. 1 white, 1 blue. Is that uncommon or common.
Yeah, that one's uncommon.
Okay. 1/2 creature human monk with prowess. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, this creature gets +1/+1 until end of turn. And whenever Jeskai Elder gets deals combat, but I can't words. I apologize on behalf of my family and my house and all of California. Whenever Jeskai Elder deals combat damage to a player, you may draw a card. If you do, discard a card.
I'm not sure if I like this very much. Mm.
You could zoom in a little more, just throw that out. Okay, I will. Because also I can't really see the card art, even with my glasses. It's probably time for a new prescription.
Probably.
But, yeah, he's got all flowy, dancy.
She.
She?
Yeah, very clearly she.
Okay. Again, working so well right now. Senses is a general rule.
Yeah.
I am also in post-lunch coma mode.
Yeah.
Big lunch.
My one, besides the fact that she's kind of a meh card, my one big problem is with her weapon and how she's holding it. Because that's just a thing now. So she has a 3-section staff that has a 4th section that is a blade. So the way that you normally hold a 3-section staff is by the center section so that you have a level of control over the other two.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, she's holding it by the very end. Basically, she's trying to use it like a whip.
Uh-huh.
She's like, that doesn't work. We'll move on now before I go crazy.
You can just tell that there is something awkward about that. Like, even me as a person who has, like, very next to no knowledge of weaponry at all, there's something awkward about the way that this weapon is moving through the air and her holding of it.
Yeah. Mm. So up next, we've got the Mardu Skull Hunter. Mm-hmm. This is a common... part of the Mardu. For 1 colorless and 1 black, he's a creature human warrior. He's a common. He enters the battlefield tapped as a 2/1. So, meh. But he has the Mardu ability, Raid. When Mardu Skull Hunter enters the battlefield, if you attacked with a creature this turn, target opponent discards a card.
Waste.
Yeah, so it's sort of a, it's sort of like, what was that thing called? Bloodthirst, where it's an encouragement to, like, a sort of a new player training thing. Attack first, then play your creatures.
Right. I was going to say the barbarians in Civ who raid your lands. Narset, Enlightened Master. 3 colorless, 1 blue, 1 red, 1 white. Legendary creature, human monk, mythic rare, of course, and is a 3/2 with first strike and hexproof. Whenever Narset, Enlightened Master, attacks, exile the top 4 cards of your library. Until end of turn, you may cast non-creature cards exiled with Narset this turn without paying their mana costs.
I don't think this will be good in anything that's not Commander.
Hmm.
And even in Commander, this is a personal thing, I really don't like those kind of abilities because I go, like, I will never get those cards back now.
Mm-hmm.
I know plenty of other people will say left, right, and center that, no, you're wrong, this is a very good ability. I just don't personally like it.
Yeah.
However...
that's a thing that always, freaks me out. Is when it's like, opportunities missed. I can't do it. Crying.
However, a 3/2 first striking hexproof for 6 is kind of expensive. But besides that, I think she's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I really do... I can't help...
And glowy goldenness of her art is wonderful.
I was actually going to say, I really like her weapon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was about to, pay attention to that.
This is going to be a running problem with all of these sets, I'm willing to bet, is that I really like the design of that weapon. It's something that I don't think will ever actually really work, but I really like the design. Something about just the basic simplicity of the spear with the fairly large head, and then the sort of curve, because I don't think it would really... I think the idea being that, it's a blade catcher or something like that would really work very well, but I think it's stylized very well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not something that has to be shown to work, but I like the idea of it.
Mm-hmm.
So up next is another one of the... this is actually the thing that we read earlier. Turns out it was not Soundclaw Mage or whatever it was. It's actually supposed to be called Rattleclaw Mystic. Hmm. Derp. Knew we forgot something there. I didn't know if they'd actually done the other thing of it yet.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. So.
Do you want to do it?
I'll do this one. You can do the next one. Okay. So, we've got Sarkon, the Dragon Speaker. Sadly, we did not guess correctly on the three-color thing.
Mm-hmm.
He is three colorless and two red. He is a Planeswalker Sarkon, mythic rare, because duh, with four loyalty. He's also super weird, and this is tiny text, so I'm going to have to like lean in to read this.
I believe in you.
Plus one, until end of turn, Sarkon Dragon Speaker becomes a legendary 4/4 red dragon creature with flying, indestructible, and haste. He does not lose loyalty while he is a planeswalker. While he's not a planeswalker.
Yeah.
Minus three.
The hell kind of planeswalker would that be?
I don't know. That would be broken. That sounds like Gideon, because I'm pretty sure he has something like that. Hate Gideon. Minus three, Sarkon the Dragon Speaker deals four damage to target creature. That's not bad. I guess he sort of protects himself. And minus six, you get an emblem with, at the beginning of your draw step, draw two additional cards. At the beginning of your end step, discard your hand.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if I really like that.
Yeah.
I like his plus one ability.
Mm-hmm.
It seems very in flavor. I'm just not sure about the rest of him.
I feel like if maybe you played him sort of towards, like, you know, the last, like, later game, or use that ability later game and stuff, where, like, you didn't have a big hand and you weren't discarding that much and you just had the opportunity to draw two cards every turn.
Yeah. Well, there's also the thing where, especially when you look at a Planeswalker Ultimate, you have to think that you'll probably never get to cast it, so you should always focus on the other two.
Mm-hmm.
However, in his case, it's almost a reasonable assumption, because it would take... you could cast it the third turn you had him out.
Yep.
But that would mean losing him. Honestly, I think he's probably better with just his plus one, because, I mean, you're getting a 4/4 flyer that can't be killed and has haste.
Mm-hmm.
But his minus three is also pretty good, because deal four damage to a creature. We haven't seen very many creatures with more than four health, so
mm-hmm.
We'll see. I mean, I don't think he's going to do amazing, but I don't think any of the Sarkons have ever been like amazing tournament things.
Yeah,
but we have talked about his art before. That should be on episode 30, I think.
Yep. And then I'll take the Sultai Charm, which is a black, green, blue, uncommon instant. Choose one. Destroy target monocolored creature. Destroy target artifact or enchantment. Draw two cards, then discard a card. Strike, the fumes hiss. Rise an empire with your ambition.
Raise an empire.
Raise? Sorry. Raise.
So I like that they're already basically going like, this is totally a cycle. Because
mm-hmm.
it's a Sultai charm. Why would there not be charms for the other ones?
Mm-hmm.
And I really like these like choose ones.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to be kind of overcosted for the individual abilities, but you're paying for the fact that you get to pick which one you want.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these seem pretty good, so I'm not complaining.
Yep.
So, up next we've got the Temur Ascendancy. This is the... And then I hiccup and die.
Temur Frontier card art.
Yeah, this is the art that we already talked about that was sort of a summation of the Temur. So, for a green, blue, red, this is a rare enchantment. This is also part of a cycle. I believe they all only cost three, and it's just the same as whatever the colors are.
The wedge.
Yep. Creatures you control have haste. Whenever a creature with power four or greater enters the battlefield under your control, you may draw a card.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is a really good summation of what they're going to end up doing.
Because
it's going to be, like, you hit hard, you hit fast, and you get a benefit for big, big, stompy creatures.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not doing the annoying...
which is cool, because I feel like that's, you know, some of green's best thing, and, you know, a bit of red and stuff,
yeah,
but what
you're
blue
getting...
lacks.
Yeah, and I like that you're getting it when Naya did something similar, and that's the green-white-red shard.
Mm-hmm.
But their big focus was on five-cost creatures.
Mm-hmm.
Not five-cost, five-power creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just... all of them were so expensive that it was unreasonable to be able to do that. In this case, I think four power is more reasonable and easier to actually get to.
Yeah.
So we might have a better chance of actually seeing that part go off.
Yeah. And then Enoch Bonkin, which it's very...
It's the...
I'm just appreciating the card art.
Yeah.
One colorless, one white, common creature hound soldier. It's a 2/1 with outlast, one colorless, one white, so put a, for that cost and tap, put a +1/+1 counter on this creature, outlast only as a sorcery. Each creature you control with a +1/+1 counter on it has first strike.
And he's part of the, what is the house? Like an Azaban. Azban.
Okay.
Keep adding a syllable.
Mm-hmm. And each creature you can, no, blah, blah, hold the line for family and the fallen.
I really like this card, like, a lot.
I love the artwork.
The art is beautiful, because, I mean, this is the first time where we actually have some form of canine humanoid, and I want to know the species name. Darn it, please. Mm-hmm. But I also like the fact that...
Canoid, that's what I'm going to call him.
But I also like the fact that it gives first strike to all the other creatures that... like, use their outlast ability.
Yeah.
Including itself.
Yep.
So, I think you... Yeah, I believe you can actually do this turn... no, you can't do this turn one. But... And I think we forgot to mention that outlast does require tapping. Uh-huh. So he can't immediately become a 3-2 with first strike, but pretty quickly he can become a 3-2 with first strike that can attack.
Uh-huh.
Like, that's really nice. I really like this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like the implication of he's holding a spear. That's how he gets first strike. And being surrounded by these other people with spears.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot explain how much I really like this card.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a common with beautiful flavor. What the hell? That's not fair.
Good work.
Ha.
And...
Oh, sorry, you're not done?
No, just the blue-orange is nice, and, like, the light reflecting off his pointy stick.
Yeah.
Good.
I don't even know if it's supposed to be, if the metal itself there is gold, but the way it's reflecting off just works so beautifully. Mm-hmm. Oh. So next we've got another member of the Azaban. Dear God, I can't pick my favorite clan, because originally mm-hmm. it was the Sultai Brood, but now I really like the Azaban. Sorry.
I also really like giving him an extra syllable.
I was about to say, I keep adding an A. Azban.
Someone's been reading too much Harry
Abzan.
Potter.
Abzan. I'm also apparently switching letters. Dear God.
Damn you, JK.
So for 3 colorless, 1 white, 1 black, 1 green, this is a creature human warrior. It is also a common. It is a 4/4 with lifelink. It also has morph with a morph cost of 2 colorless, a green, a white, and a red.
In my mind, it's riding a giraffe tauntaun hybrid.
Pretty much, yeah. Sorry, and it's a 2 colorless, white, green, black. Dear God, kill me. So basically, it's a less expensive way of getting it. So in theory, you could get it a turn earlier as the 4/4 lifelinker.
Mm-hmm.
These roads are desolate and changeable. Follow me or die in the wastes.
Hmm.
Scary and creepy, but mm-hmm. okay.
I want to see the rest of the creature it's riding.
Me too. I also really like that there's a crescent moon in the background,
uh-huh.
but you can still see like a bit of the shadow of the rest of the moon.
Mm, yeah, I love, good.
And I really like the implied, like, yeah, dusk.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the, you know, some sort of pollution-y sunset that gives you those sort of colors and stuff, slash aurora-y feel.
Because you've got, like, the dark purple all across the ground, the sort of bright blue in the sky, and then...
The little bit of the dusky yellow-orange green.
Oh, it looks so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
Heir of the Wilds, one colorless, one green, uncommon creature human warrior who's a 2/2 with death touch and has ferocious. Whenever Heir of the Wilds attacks, if you control a creature with power 4 or greater, Heir of the Wilds gets +1/+1 until end of turn. In the high caves of the Khalsizna Mountains, young hunters quest to hear the echoes of their fierce ancestors.
And I believe ferocious is the, what is it, the Timur mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think that fits really well.
Because mm-hmm.
again, we're having this whole like +4 or 4 or greater power thing.
Mm-hmm.
So up next, we've got the Ice Feather Aven, who is also a member of the Temur. He, for green and blue, it is a creature bird shaman. It's an uncommon. It's a 2/2 with flying for 2, so that's pretty sweet to start with.
It sounds like, you know, a 12-year-old girl's pen name. It's Feather Aven.
It has a morph cost of 1 colorless, a blue, and a green, and when Ice Feather Aven is turned face up, you may return another target creature to its owner's hand.
Mm.
So it's basically a, you can pay one more for this and turn it into a bounce spell. I like it. Like, this is a really good card. See, this is why I can't pick which clan I want.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's good card art and everything, but... Jeskai Wind Scout, 2 colorless, 1 blue, common creature bird scout is 2/1 with flying, of course, because bird, and has prowess. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, this creature gets +1/+1 till end of turn. They range from Sage Eye Stronghold to the farthest reaches of Tarkir.
So, there's one thing I want to do, which is compare this... There's very different, like, styles of Aven here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this looks like a cardinal, and then Ice Feather Aven was obviously raveny.
Well, I'm trying to... Do cardinals have this sort of, like, short beak and very enclosed head? Because I don't recall, honestly.
I believe so. Let's Google.
But then, yeah, like, the Ice Feather Aven has this very clearly raven-inspired head where a good 40% of it is taken up by this large, pointy beak. And this is a guy who I don't want to ever run into.
Mm-hmm.
Like, ever. But the Jeskai Wind Scout, I'd almost say, like, that might be an agreeable person to meet if... Yeah, I mean, the beak is about right, and I guess it does sort of have that little head ruffle for a cardinal.
Oh, head ruffle.
I'm trying to think of the right word for it, but...
Crest?
Crest, yes. Because it has the sort of crest at the back of its head there.
Do we have cardinals out here?
I don't know. I don't pay much attention to birds.
Okay. I love the art on this one.
I do, too. I can't figure out what the hell is going on, but we are talking about Lens of Clarity. So for 1 colorless, it is an artifact. It is common. You may look at the top card of your library and at a face-down creature you don't control.
Ooh.
You may do this at any time. So basically it is, I can look at what your morph cards are.
Mm-hmm.
I can also just go, what am I going to draw next turn? Okay, but it's not scry. You can't, like... do anything with it. You can just go, oh, okay, that's what I'm going to have.
Uh-huh.
Water shifts and confuses, but as ice, it holds the stillness of truth. And the one thing I really like that I don't think we can really show here is that the person is sort of holding up this lens at a horrible ball of, like, raging fire and sees that it's a tiger.
Uh-huh.
There has actually been art for a morph token that looks basically like a raging ball of fire.
Nice.
So, I just like that they're actually using something that they've already established.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mardu War Shrieker. 3 colorless, 1 red. Is that common?
Yes.
Okay. Common creature, Orc Shaman, is a 3/3 raid. When Mardu War Shrieker enters the battlefield, if you attacked with a creature this turn, add red, white, black to your mana pool. Nobody can contain so much fury. It reminds me of another battle long past, Sargon Vol.
I'm not sure what he's talking about there, but oh my god, look at that.
Well, didn't he get, like, super angry and pissed off and then he went crazy?
He went crazy on Zendikar because he sort of channeled the spirit of an ancient dragon planeswalker named Ugin.
Okay.
And... in doing so, also led to the release of the Eldrazi and went sort of nuts.
Mm-hmm. Who wouldn't?
And we actually sort of have an explanation, hopefully before this episode is done, as to why he's sort of sane now.
Oh, cool.
I do really like, though, that it, even though it doesn't quite recoup the full cost, it still is a, give me the other 2 colors for my clan with this guy. Oh, there we go. There's the morph.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's this weird, raging ball of sort of...
It's weird because it almost has, like, this anthropomorphic dragon kind of look to it. Like, you see the
almost.
Arc of the neck and then, like, limbs and...
And there's almost sort of, like, the very traditional Chinese dragon sort of back ridge there and a similar thing over down here, too, as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very spirit of the plane fireball.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, and I like that that is just a token. Like...
Mm-hmm. I love tokens. I wish I got more of them. I always get the weird promo cards that you can't actually have any use for besides bookmarks.
Yeah.
Though they
did
make good bookmarks.
Did you do the last one or did I?
It's a good question.
You did that one.
Okay.
Okay. So next we've got shambling
zombies.
Shambling attendants.
I'm writing a zombie story. That's why I watched Zombieland the other night. Also, Zombieland is just one of my favorite movies. But continue.
Yeah. So for 7 colorless and 1 black, it's a 3/5 with death touch. That sounds horrible, but there's a little bit more to it. First of all, yes, it's a creature zombie. It's a common. It has a mechanic from Future Sight. Delve. Each card you exile from your graveyard while casting this spell pays for 1 colorless. I kind of like that, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Let the world behold what has become of those who defy us. So it looks like Delve is going to be the... I already forgot their... I can't read your writing. Sirtai?
That's the fang. So yeah, Sirtai.
Sirtai. So it looks like Delve is going to be the mechanic for the Sirtai.
Mm-hmm.
The Sirtai Brood. This art is not clear enough right now, and I think zooming in would not help anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd like to see more reflections of this, because mm-hmm. you can see a very clear difference between these like zombies who are attendants, so servants, slaves,
mm-hmm.
and the other Sirtai that we've already seen. So
shout out to the word shambling, because it's a great word.
Yeah.
Bitter revelation.
Yeah,
I had this problem too and cried a little inside. It's all blurry. That's why we're crying. 3 colorless, 1 black, common sorcery. Look at the top 4 cards of your library. Put 2 of them into your hand and the rest into your graveyard. You lose 2 life. Here you lie, then, Ugin. The corpses of the worlds will join you in the tomb, Zorn Markov.
So, before we continue, one thing that I think a lot of people may have forgotten or just haven't heard yet is that Zorn Markov, first of all, is arguably, save for maybe Nicol Bolas, who's cheating, the oldest living planeswalker. He is well over 1,000 years old, and he is one of the 3 planeswalkers who sealed away the Eldrazi originally. He, Ugin, who was a colorless planeswalker, who actually led the Eldrazi to Zendikar and helped with the sealing, and another unknown planeswalker sealed them. And Sorin and Ugin were actually fairly close. So what we apparently have just discovered is that Ugin's tomb is somewhere on...
Tarkir.
Oh, you get the actual Sorin, too.
Cool. Sorin, Solemn Visitor. 2 colorless, 1 white, 1 red. Planeswalker, Sorin, Mythic, Rare. Who'd a thunk? Mm. And has 4 loyalty counters for +1. +1. Until your next turn, creatures you control get +1/+0 and gain lifelink. -2, put a 2/2 black vampire creature token with flying onto the battlefield. And -6, you get an emblem with, at the beginning of each opponent's upkeep, that player sacrifices a creature.
Again, I think he's actually going to be quite good.
Yes.
They have not printed a bad Sorin yet.
That looks like dragon.
Yeah, I think that is a skeleton. Dragon spine for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure about the art, just because he seems very out of place, but I think that's the point.
So, you know, he has a little bit of hair quaffing up into the border, or mm-hmm. out of the border.
Yeah.
And stuff. I noticed, we might have talked about this before, but, crap, why can't I remember his name?
Sarkon?
Yes.
Yeah, he didn't come out of his border, like, at all. Yeah.
And I felt sad inside, because
we saw the same thing with the Teferi mm-hmm. one for the Commander product that they have said nothing else about recently.
And I was like, why you do this to me?
Yeah. But I do like that he makes vampires still. Mm-hmm. Actually, this is a card that is very similar to his last printing, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
But, we'll see how he does. I expect this one to be better than the Sarkon, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, Ugin's Nexus. 5 colorless. It is a legendary artifact. It is a mythic rare. If a player that would begin an extra turn... If a player would begin an extra turn, that player skips that turn instead.
Huh.
If Ugin's Nexus would be put into the graveyard from the battlefield, instead exile it and take an extra turn after this one.
Hmm.
All at once, Sarkon's mind fell silent. So basically, it seems that when Sarkon returned home, he actually discovered what appears to be the corpse of Ugin, which silenced the spirit of Ugin that was driving him nuts. And it appears that this really is, like, the Ugin's Nexus is the ribcage of a giant dragon planeswalker.
Uh-huh.
Which is minorly terrifying.
Yeah, it's just a lot.
Yeah. Oh, right. I forgot there was a better version of it.
Yeah. So, yay. Blurry version. Hooray.
Also not blurry version. Uh-huh. Derp. I don't know why they have these, but we did that one.
Do this one.
No, we did not. Do you want to take it?
Sure. I love me some lands.
Yep.
Some non-basic lands, I should say. Mystic Monastery is an uncommon land. Mystic Monastery enters the battlefield tapped. Tap, add blue, red, or white into your mana pool. And when asked how many paths reach enlightenment, the monk kicked a heap of sand. Count, he smiled, and then find more grains.
I love that. I think that surmises sort of the goal of the Jeskai very clearly.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God, I like it. I like it far too much.
Yeah.
Like, the art is not bad. I think it's very clearly supposed to be, like, this is not our main, stronghold. This is a monastery.
Yeah.
So there are bigger, more impressive ones out there.
Uh-huh. With the terraced, farmy, landscapey bit.
I like that. I like that it's uncommon, so you can actually sort of expect to maybe get some of these.
Mm-hmm.
And you could almost hope that you could get some mana fixing if you're playing limited.
Mm-hmm.
So the other one we've got is the Nomad Outpost. Enters the battlefield tapped. You can tap it for red, white, or black mana. Only the weak imprison themselves behind walls. We live free under the wind, and our freedom makes us strong.
Hmm.
Which is by Zurg, Khan of the Mardu, also known as the Helm Smasher. Oh, there he is right now, but we've already read him. I kind of like this art better than his other one.
I think I do, too.
I mean, there's still no clear explanation as to why he's smashing people's helms with a sword, but...
why not?
Yeah.
Orc.
Yep.
Ivory Tusk Fortress.
Yep.
Glorious. Two colorless, one white, one black, one green. The Azban Scaly Endurance is your motif. Your rare creature elephant, who's a 5/7, because elephant.
Yeah.
Untap each creature you control with a +1/+1 counter on it during each other player's untap step. And Azban soldiers march to war, confident that their houses march with them.
You did it too! She said Azban.
I did, didn't I?
And we do know
probably
that...
did twice.
We know that this is going to be...
You said it so many times.
At the very least, this is going to be the... What's it called? The card in the front of... The... God, what's it called? The deck boxes that are...
Oh.
Intro pack. This is going to be one of the intro pack cards, so this is part of a sort of cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that it will probably be the... What's
I like
it called?
How it's a more Asian elephant than African elephant.
Yeah, me too.
Good job.
But I think that means it's going to be in the sealed box for the pre-release. If they do that again, which they probably will, we'll see. You might not get to play with it, but who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But I do like that this heavily supports everything that the Abzan do.
Mm-hmm. And it's a good scale people for the elephants.
Ooh! I forgot that there was another one of the,
Legendaries?
Yeah, the Legendary Spoiled. So this is... Oh,
Cidicy?
God. Cidicy? I think it's Cidicy.
I can't tell if that's an I or an L.
It is. There are no L's.
Pretend dyslexia.
Cidicy Blood Tyrant.
Brood.
Brood Tyrant. Less creepy. No, not less creepy at all, actually. So for one colorless, a black, a green, and a blue, it's a legendary creature.
I keep hitting myself with my pen.
Oh, that sucks. Naga Shaman. It's a mythic rare, 3/3.
Naga Shaman.
Yeah. Whenever Cidicy Brood Tyrant enters the battlefield or attacks...
I like it because it sounds like hissing.
Yes, I think so too. Yeah.
I'm making faces because I'm pleased.
She is. Put the top three cards of your library into your graveyard. When one or more creature cards... are put into your graveyard from your library, put a 2/2 black zombie creature token onto the battlefield.
Nice.
I don't like that it has to be from your library, but besides that, I like it.
Uh-huh. Right, I like zombies.
Yeah, and I like that it also supports Delve as this clan's mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
Because it means, oh, there's things in my graveyard now, so I can exile them to actually get, cheaper stuff.
Uh-huh. End hostilities. 3 colorless, 2 white, rare sorcery. Destroy all creatures and all permanents attached to creatures. Her palm flared like the eye of a waking dragon. Then all was calm.
That's pretty sweet. There is no, like, watermark, but I'd say this should belong with the Jeskai.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that it's all permanents attached to creatures, so that includes, like, auras, officially now equipments attached, because that used to be a confusing thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes bestowed creatures, too, uh-huh. so you don't get them afterwards. That's really cool. Howl of the Horde. So for two colorless and a red, it's a sorcery, it's a rare. Whenever you cast your next instant or sorcery spell this turn, copy that spell. You may choose a new target for the copy. It also has raid. If you attacked with a creature this turn, when you cast your next instant or sorcery spell this turn, blah, 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 blah.
If you attacked with a creature this turn, when you cast your next instant or sorcery spell this turn, copy that spell an additional time. You may choose new targets for the copy.
Okay, so basically if you use the raid, you get to do the original spell and two extra copies. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's going to be really sweet. And I like that it is literally a guy screaming lightning. I don't know why. But
I know, he's like this really like super barbarian Thor, and it's kind of excellent.
See, I get the feeling that they're making lightning sort of a running theme for mm-hmm. the Mardu, because you already had, Crackling Doom?
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like that is their primary form of magic, that uh-huh. may be fire.
Well, yeah, do they each have, like, do any of them have, like, other magical motif-y things?
Not
like
really.
That we've seen from the cards revealed.
Not really. It looks like the Jeskai seem to have sort of a focus on wind, but uh-huh. that's pretty much it. And that the Soleil? Soray? I can't remember.
Sutai?
Sutai, thank you. Sutai? Sorry, your T looks like an L.
Uh-huh. There might be an L that's just supposed to be there.
Oops. The Sutai brood have a running thing of necromancy, but that's lightning. That's usually not actively shown.
Lightning.
But I love that he's literally screaming lightning.
Mm-hmm. Sagu Mahler. Four colorless, one green, one blue. Creature beast is a rare. It's a 6/6 with trample and hexproof. Has morph for three colorless, one green, one blue. And the Sagu jungle's thick undergrowth conceals even the largest predators if they wish to remain hidden.
That's creepy.
It's terrifying.
This seems really, really good. Mm-hmm. Like, even if you don't do the cheat it out for less expensive with morph,
uh-huh.
you still, for six, get a 6/6 with trample and hexproof. Just 'cause.
Uh-huh.
I like it. I mean, it's not strictly speaking attached to a clan, but I think it's probably going to end up heavily focusing on
Sutai Brood?
Yes, the Sutai Brood. And then there is there an English version of this? Why is there not an English version of this? Okay.
I'll just read the thing. Yeah. I had to do it earlier.
I thought this was yours, because... Oh, wait, no, that is mine, yeah. What did we decide this person's name was? Anafenza. The Foremost. Legendary creature, human soldier. It's a mythic rare for white, black, green. I keep getting that order screwy somehow.
And that part you can read off the thing.
Yeah. Apparently this was spoiled in Japan, so there is no English version yet. Whenever Anafenza the Foremost attacks, put a +1/+1 counter on another target tapped creature you control. If a creature would be put into opponent's graveyard from anywhere, exile it instead. Hmm. So there is flavor text, but we can't read that part. Uh-huh. I'd like the first ability.
Another tap creature you control. Creature card will be put in one's graveyard from anywhere. Exile it instead.
So I like the +1 because that works with the...
With, what is it? Is it the Naga who... The one that, you know, can pull from their graveyard to their thing.
Exile,
to
yeah. That's the Sirtai.
Yeah, okay. Sirtai. That's probably what that is. It's probably an R. Anyway, it stops if you're, again, if that's what you're facing.
I don't think they...
stops that.
I don't think they can pull from other people's graveyards, at least that we've seen.
The creature would be put into an opponent's graveyard from anywhere, exile it instead.
Oh, wow.
So it hinders that.
I thought it said from... I thought it was if a creature would be put into a graveyard. How did I read that and misread it? Yeah, that actually seems really good then. Oh. And...
I helped.
Yeah.
I'm glad I
like that his or her, I cannot tell, like, base ability is really helpful for the Abazon.
Mm-hmm.
Because... Yeah. I got it. Haha.
You said Abazon. You put...
Azban. God damn. Which one is it?
I spelled it Azban, but I think it's supposed to be Abzan.
God damn it.
So, there's a lot of...
Wait. Their next card is... Abzan. Yes, I had it correctly and you messed with me. Damn
no,
it.
No, you said Abazan. You put the X, you put the A in.
Oh, well, I had the B and the Z correctly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that this ability works really well with Outlast and the fact that it looks like they're trying to make a running theme of some creatures that, like, if you give a plus one counter and you happen to have, what was it, the Broodkin? I have to scroll back so far. The something kin, the dog guy.
That one?
Yes. And a bond kin, then, now this thing also has first strike, just in case. And I'm willing to bet there will be more cards that do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe this one is all yours.
Okay. Mardu Ascendancy. The red, white, black, rare enchantment. Whenever a non-token creature you control attacks, put a 1/1 red goblin creature token onto the battlefield tapped and attacking. Sacrifice Mardu Ascendancy. Creatures you control get +0/+3 until end of turn.
I think the second part is a bit odd, but the first part seems very appropriate.
Yeah. Then wait, Mardu, Horde.
Yeah.
They're about speed.
Yeah.
I feel like they should get haste and, like, plus something. But,
well, I think that's why... I think sacrificing it is basically a defense maneuver.
Uh-huh.
The rest of this is just, like... I like that... It's not a hasty goblin, it's just a goblin who is attacking. Like, there is no choice, it's just like, he is attacking.
Yeah.
Then we've also got the Abzan Ascendancy. Shut up. She's cheering off to my left.
Indeed.
So
finally cheering, though.
White,
so
black, green, it is a rare enchantment. When Abzan Ascendancy enters the battlefield, put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control. Oh my gosh, yes. Whenever a non-token... And then I hiccup and die. Whenever a non-token creature you control dies, put a 1/1 white spirit creature token with flying onto the battlefield.
Hmm.
I'm continuing to really, really like this clan.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Yeah, and someone... I'm just reading a comment that was like, almost playable with Gov. I'm like, yes! I need this in my Gov deck now, actually.
See the Unwritten. It's a beautiful title. Four colorless, two green, mythic rare sorcery. Reveal the top 8 cards of your library. You may put a creature card from among them onto the battlefield, put the rest into your graveyard. Ferocious. If you control a creature with power 4 or greater, you may put 2 creature cards onto the battlefield instead of 1.
I'm not sure if I like this card, but I like the idea of it.
Uh-huh.
And at some point they did make a statement that, especially with green, this was sort of a mechanic they were going to try to push instead of green doing card draw, that green basically do a search through the top amount of your library and pull specific things out.
Mm-hmm.
And this just seems good, especially since it's not put into hand, it's just battlefield. Because
mm-hmm.
I like that, especially when if you have the Ferocious.
Mm-hmm.
That seems really nice.
Yeah.
And then I think this is the last one. It should be.
Which is beautiful because of its name.
Yes. So, just to be perfect, Utter End. So, for 2 colorless, a white and a black, it is a rare instant. Exile, not destroy, just exile, target, non-land, permanent. I came seeking a challenge. All I found was you, Zurg, Khan of the Mardu. I just like that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Not only, it's just, like, no. You were not even enough of a challenge to kill. You were just gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just like, thanks for wasting my time.
Yeah.
I came all the way out here for this. Screw this.
Just, like, no one will ever find your body.
What body?
This seems like a really good card, honestly. Mm-hmm. Maybe not in...
He looks like he's completely, like, burned through and, like... Sorry. Oop. Removed, like, his essence from existence.
I think that's sort of the point.
I know.
Admittedly, we are looking at this on kind of, like, a tiny... Mm-hmm. It's smaller than, like, all of the other cards for some reason. Uh-huh. Because it was...
What is it?
Oh, because it was spoiled by freaking Star City. God damn, Star City.
Isn't there something like that's how the world ended, not with a bang, but with a...
Whimper?
Something like that and stuff. It's its utter end. It's small.
Yeah.
Like, that's my logic for it.
I think he's also hitting the horse that the person is riding on top of it. But I do like that he's just...
Like, that'd be horrible to experience in real life.
Yeah.
But, you know, just observing it as a card, it's thoroughly amusing.
But I love that it is non-land permanent, so just anything... No, I was trying to close the chat window, you stupid machine.
It's reminding you that you need to help me make brownies.
I wasn't clicking on... I accidentally clicked on your name in the chat
window.
I don't care.
Brownies.
So, I probably could have... Like, maybe some of these look better this way. I doubt it, but it's worth a try.
I believe.
Nope.
I believe.
Possibly
believe.
Even worse.
Yeah.
Oh, well. So far, I'm really looking forward to this set.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I'm looking forward to, like, the next one in the block.
Just to see what they do with that.
Uh-huh.
Since...
Yeah, just to see where the story goes and, you know, the dragon's coming back. Because, I mean, they gotta come back.
Because we know that the last one is going to be Dragons of Tarkir. I don't think we know what the second one is.
Yeah. Huh.
I don't know for sure, honestly. Mm-hmm. Did we do this one? Or did we skip it twice?
I don't know. Might have skipped it twice.
Do you want to take it then?
Sure. Mardu Heartpiercer, 3 colorless, 1 red, uncommon creature, human archer, who's a 2/3. Raid, when Mardu Heartpiercer enters the battlefield, if you attacked with a creature this turn, Mardu Heartpiercer deals 2 damage to target creature or player. Those who have never ridden before the wind do not know the true joy of war. Man, it's pretty pony.
I'm not sure if I get that, but okay.
Pretty pony. That's all that matters.
Wow, that is, like, big art.
Mm-hmm. Very.
I just want to make sure we didn't accidentally miss anything.
I don't think so.
Yeah. I'm not horribly worried, but I just want to go back just to be completely sure. I can't wait to see what the rest of the charms do, though.
Mm-hmm.
Those I'm kind of looking forward to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think... Oh, no, there is one. Because for some reason there isn't another art for it.
Oh, Necropolis Fiend?
Yes.
The thing I wrote down that you told me to, like, make a note of?
Yes. So the last one, which for some reason they don't have in their album, but I think is actually on the Wizard site. Necropolis Fiend. 7 colorless, 2 black. It is a rare creature demon. It is a 4/5 with flying. Again, it's going to have delve. Just that cost is ridiculous for that much.
Mm-hmm.
So, delve. Each card you exile from your graveyard while casting this spell pays for 1 colorless. It also has pay X and tap. Exile X cards from your graveyard. Target creature gets -X/-X until the end of turn.
Nice.
And it is a Sertai Brood card.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically... I like that this is basically the top of one of those buildings that we see. Apparently they just sort of... There are these things at the top of all of their pyramid necropolises.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see another one over in the background that probably has another one of these things.
Ties into your, like, sort of Incan thing and stuff with, like, these big, massive, like, altars and stuff.
And then there's something creepily...
But then very
human
native.
About the face, too.
Uh-huh. Then also the sort of, like, Native American traditional thing about, like, veil between world and, like, ancestors and spirits coming through. And
I think we might see some themes of that, especially since the Timur also have a thing about, that we read about their trying to
mm-hmm.
seek wisdom from the ancestors, things
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my elbows.
Oh, God.
They're all kinked.
Sorry.
They hurt.
Well,
so I'm punching the air, trying to get them to stop hurting.
So I think we're pretty much done everything now.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Did all the things.
Oh my god.
So,
with that, is there anything you want to talk about before we...
I really want brownies.
Well, I thought we were making brownies after this.
Uh-huh. I just, that's...
Oh.
You don't understand how important that is to me right now.
Well, here, 19 minutes ago, announcing set 2/3 in Khans of Tarkir block. Fate Reforged. Let me see if that's actually the name. Yep, Fate Reforged.
It's a weird little logo symbol-y thing.
With what appears to be a dragon in the background, And from the horn design, I'm minorly afraid. And oh, hey, Sargon Vol. Uh-huh. I'm minorly afraid that might be Nicol Bolas, but we'll see.
Is it? I like the green and the red going on.
Yeah, I like that you've got this massive red here with the very like dark green sky offsetting it. God damn them and their beautiful artwork, son of a mer.
How dare they?
How dare they? I just want to check and see if there's anything else that Magic the Gathering is apparently going to remind us about.
Mm-hmm. Raise your banner.
Yeah. 17 minutes ago, thankfully my Facebook decided to prioritize the announcement over the random raise your banner, which I think is just going, hey, here's this. I just realized.
Mm-hmm.
So we've now seen the card that this art is from. You don't see the lava dragon in it at all.
Hmm.
What the hell?
Hmm.
Huh. That's weird.
Huh. As the testificate says.
Ooh. And there's a trailer that I'm going to pause the recording so we can watch it, and then we will be back with our response to that, and then we will actually leave.
Okay.
Hang on. Let me scroll back up to it, then I can pause the
recording. You've imposed upon your day enough.
Yeah.
Just one more thing, and then we'll be gone.
Pause. Okay. So, we just watched the trailer real quick. First of all, we learned how to actually pronounce names, sort of. So it's the...
Sultai. Let's put an L in there. That's not going to help you at all. So it's
Abzan, the Jeskai we were right about, the Sultai, the Mardu, which apparently we did guess right that that's where Sarkhan is from. That is his former clan.
Mm-hmm.
And the Temur. Like it, not even Temur. The U was pronounced very much like an E, but very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like Temur.
Which I believe in linguistics is spelled like that.
I think so. Which is the upside down E, because I realize you can't see what she just wrote.
Uh-huh.
So ironically, we did also see...
Very not proud of that upside down E.
Not ironically. We also saw, at the very end of the trailer, Sarkhan turn into his dragon form, which is green for some reason. He also had a blue streak in his hair, which is not visible on any of his card art, so I'm thinking that's a little bit weird. It was a little bit more 3D than their previous animated trailers. But besides that, you learn quite a bit about the individual clans, so I would highly suggest watching the trailer. And
it's just pretty.
And they clarified that the thing that actually drove him mad is the fact that
he was torn between two dragon spirits.
Two dragons messing with his brain. Mm-hmm. Nicol Bolas, who is, among other things, a mind mage. And
a tyrant.
Yeah, and is the one who sent him to Zendikar.
Oh.
And he is well known for basically giving his subordinates sort of free will, but mostly having a terrifying amount of control. And then he met with the spirit of Ugin, who gave him a minute amount more free reign, but also was just like, you will listen to me.
Mm-hmm.
So basically he went mad because he was being given directions by two different all-powerful dragons, one of which isn't even alive.
Uh-huh. Can't imagine why that would make anyone nuts.
Yeah, not at all.
What a ridiculous notion.
So I'm really looking forward to this. Mm-hmm. And as we said, they just also announced Fate Reforged is the middle expansion.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with that, is there anything you want to cover, like, unrelated before we go?
Just brownies.
Well, I need coffee more than anything right now.
You had a giant mug of coffee earlier.
It wasn't that full. It wasn't even, like, half full.
Put so much milk in it, too.
Yeah, because it wasn't, like, half full, and that was 3-day-old coffee. So it got really strong. Well, let's see. I will hopefully be returning to making videos regularly soon-ish. The big problem is just that a lot of crap happened, and I can guarantee when I do return, it will not be at anywhere near the rate that they have been, but still.
Something.
Yeah. Because I was going through massive anxiety and panic attacks for no good reason, and that caused me to, along with work and other crap, to not be able to produce videos, and when I was no longer able to produce videos and this podcast, I went minorly crazy because...
You had no outlet?
I had no outlet, and I was just like, I need to do a thing! And as you can properly vouch, I have been, like, a horrible pissant for the past, like, 2 weeks.
More so than usual.
Yeah. And that's because I had no outlet and was just, like, trying to release everything through gaming, and that only releases so much.
Mm-hmm.
But, yes, hopefully we'll return to a semi-regular schedule.
Mm-hmm.
I will attempt to force Stephanie to do some things with me because I bought a PVR from a friend of mine.
PVR?
Basically a device that lets me record consoles.
Ah.
Yeah.
Cool.
And I'm going to...
see how bad I am at Assassin's Creed Black Flag.
Yeah, probably.
It's so offensive how bad I am.
And I will...
I apologize again.
I will attempt...
my family.
To get you to join me for actually doing one of these live.
Mm-hmm.
Like...
It sounds like a good idea.
It would probably still be a Tuesday, so we'll see.
Ha. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know about a good idea, but I think it'll be fun.
Okay.
If once we decide if we're going to do that and when, we will make an announcement at least a week ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
So just remember that you can find us on Facebook, Show of Feast and Famine. You can find us on Twitter. I am at Show of FNF.
I am.
Oh. Right. I'm not. Sorry. I'm at Cap America.
I'm at StephanF.
And you can find everything that we actually do on the Show of Feast and Famine. The Show of FNF.com. Dear God, kill me. I cannot English today.
We're rusty.
Yeah.
We're rusty.
You can email us at the Show of Feast and Famine at gmail.com. We have an email that we need to respond to because I think we both kept looking at it going, well, I know I kept looking at it going, did I respond to that? Did Stephanie respond to that? We probably should have. And then going back into a horrible coma of anxiety and, like, horrible personness.
We're both hermits.
Yeah. So I keep looking at your email and going, like, I should respond to you because,
dear
God. Why do you
have Google Calendar tell you that we have no events scheduled today, like, all the time?
I don't know. I'm trying to fix mine from doing that. But I keep looking at that going, like, I need to respond to that, and then I go into a coma of
this
hatred.
One?
Yeah, from, I don't want to say your name because I don't think you ever actually gave us permission to do anything like that, but still, it was like, we got a email from a listener who's just like, we should respond to this because this is what we do this stuff for.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
Then we broke and, yeah.
Yeah, just, you know, hid.
Hopefully, you get a response to this. To your email before this episode goes online. I'm very sorry.
Fingers crossed. I'm not going to do pinky swears. That's the Muggle version of the unbreakable vow.
But we don't actually know where he is. Like, my pinky is not, like, heat-seeking.
I stayed up until 5 this morning. I don't know what's happening right now.
I've also been playing games, so one of my pinkies is horribly crapped out because shift keys.
Mm-hmm.
But, eh. So, with that, I think we will actually leave now.
Okay.
Thank you very much for listening to this madness. And
Release the hound!
We will hopefully see you next week as she runs away to... Oh, God, she's releasing the dog.